the biggest thing for me has been we still have to continue to put one foot in front of the other and control what's in our locus of control on the day-to-day and not allow the frenzy and the political theater that's happening to distract us from what the ultimate goal is, and that is liberation and self-sustainability for our communities. And we can do that work regardless of who's in office.
Welcome to another episode of Advocates in Action, a podcast created by the Patient Advocate Foundation, a nonprofit that helps promote equitable access to affordable quality healthcare through providing case management services, financial assistance, and patient education and advocacy tools to people living with chronic, life-threatening, and debilitating illnesses. I'm your host, Ashley Freeman, Manager of Stakeholder Outreach and Engagement, and welcome to Season 9, where we get the opportunity to amplify several stories and contexts that illustrate health justice as a community-led movement for power building and transformational change. This season is brought to you in collaboration with Massey Comprehensive Cancer Center at Virginia Commonwealth University. Thank you so much, Dr. Lash Nolan, for being here with me today as we wrap up our season on health justice. And so for people who aren't familiar with your background, please give them an introduction to who you are.
Ashley, thank you so much for bringing us together. I'm so excited for our conversation today. My name is Dr. Lashira Nolan, but everyone calls me Lash. I'm originally from Los Angeles, California. I was born in Compton, California. And I think that my story and background really starts with my mom, who is an incredible woman. Her name is Ty Harps. She raised me as a single parent in Compton, California, with the support of my grandmother and our family in LA. She was the first person in our family to both get her bachelor's and her master's degree. And it was really growing up seeing the emphasis that my mom put on education that helped me understand that I can do this too. When I was around 8 years old, that's when I decided that I wanted to become a physician. It was a very random idea that came up after I won the science fair and I realized how much I love science. When I won, I was like, oh, wow, I can actually be good at this. And that meant so much for this little girl in Compton. You know, from that moment, my mom and my grandmother, they just breathed so much life into that dream. They never made it seem like it was strange or impossible that I wanted to become a doctor. And I think that audacity to pursue any dream in my heart is really what has allowed me to get to the place that I am now. Last year, I graduated from Harvard Medical School. While I was there, I was the first Black woman to become student council president. There, I was able to start initiatives such as We Got Us. We Got Us was an opportunity to organize young people across the greater Boston area to make sure that folks in our community had access to trusted messengers during the COVID-19 pandemic. And we've expanded our work in exciting ways that I'll be able to share more about. In regard to me as a creative, I'm a rapper, and I also love to tell stories through writing. When I was in medical school, I was able to publish op-eds and book chapters and children's books and really all around these topics of social justice and equity. Why I start with my mother is because she was the one who instilled the audacity in me, and she also instilled the values. And my grandmother kind of bolstered all of that with her care of community. And everything that I've done, I've really tried to just center uplifting patients, uplifting my community, and making sure that I'm centering liberation and justice and all of those things. So now as an internal medicine intern, almost resident at Brigham and Women's Hospital, those are the things that I've been focusing on. And I just feel very thankful to be here. And I feel so blessed to have the women that I did in my life to help instill those values in me.
Now that is what you call an intro. Okay. So thank you so much. And yes, definitely kudos to both your grandmother and your mother for, like you said, instilling that audacity in you from such a young age, you know, because that makes a difference. And you specifically said they didn't make it seem strange or impossible, because sometimes we can, you know, instill that into children like, oh, you want to be an astronaut?
Right. Yeah. Like, I don't know, you know.
Yeah. And then things after that, there's a concept of confirmation bias, mm-hmm. right? So the fact that you had that audacity instilled in you at such a young age, every time something happened after that, it was just confirming that, yeah, I am on the right path. Yeah, I am going to become a doctor. Yes. So it just played out because you had that expectation within you. I would love for you to share, do you have any suggestion or advice to people who might not have had that audacity instilled in them at a young age. And now they might be in their 30s wanting to switch careers or do something that they're really passionate about. And it could be going out and, you know, talking about health justice or something that's on their heart, but they're afraid to take that leap. What would you tell them?
Absolutely. I just turned 30 years old and I've been reflecting on this question a lot because I think that something that I'm really proud of is that up to this point in my life, I've lived a very brave life and I've been able to kind of put myself out there, do things that were kind of in the back of my mind that I wanted to do and just give it a try. And I think that my advice to folks would be you can't allow yourself to be your biggest enemy in the sense that a lot of times when we have an idea or an initiative or something that we want to accomplish or try, we'll shut ourselves down before that idea has the opportunity to even grow in our minds. And I think that we have to stop being our own worst enemies and we have to stop allowing others' perceptions of us, others' limitations, society's limitations on who is allowed to pursue certain things, who is allowed to have certain hobbies, who is allowed to be a leader in different capacities, because we, at the end of the day, are the folks who are in charge of writing our own stories. When we're able to take control and agency over our own narratives and over our own talents that we want to cultivate, it's truly so powerful. And I think that that would be my biggest piece of advice is do not let yourself hold you back and do not let others' perceptions and limitations on you and your life hold you back either.
There's that cliche saying of we're our own worst critic and all of those things. So really breaking free of that. So thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Thank you. So tell us more about what the We Got Us initiative is and the fact that you were able to start it as a medical student is even more powerful as well.
The story of We Got Us very much is along that same vein of sometimes we can be our own worst critic, our own worst enemy, and realizing that you are the one to do the thing, sometimes even when you don't realize it. I remember distinctly when the vaccines first were being rolled out toward the end of 2020, I was getting a lot of calls from family members. They're like, Shira, what's up with these vaccines? Do we trust them? It was in that moment that I realized this unique space that I was starting to occupy, where me being a Black woman in the United States of America, I understood the context and the heaviness of something being created with the support of government and being offered to people to put in their bodies, and the heaviness of medical racism that our people experience every single day. But then in addition to that, I was this Black woman who was at Harvard Medical School, who recently went through microbiology classes and immunology classes, where we learned about how a lot of the technology behind these vaccines came to exist. So I was able to be this interpreter in some ways on both sides to help one side understand the struggles of the other, and then also to really be an advocate for my community. But not everybody has a granddaughter at Harvard Medical School. Not everybody has a niece who is a nurse and has access to that type of information and from someone that they trust. So that was something that was in the back of my mind. But then I think what really tipped it over for me was the way that people were talking about Black folks and our relationship with the vaccine. People were making faulty statements like Black people don't want the vaccine because of the historical instances of medical racism, like Henrietta Lacks and Tuskegee, right? Or what I call it now, because my mentor, Dr. Kimberly Manning, the untreated syphilis experiment. Folks were not talking about access. They were not talking about everyday experiences of racism that were driving some of our decisions around whether or not we wanted to get vaccinated. Here I was trying to talk to mentors who are well-known leaders and very well-established in their careers. I'm saying, hey guys, we need to get trusted messengers in our communities and we have to change this narrative about how we're talking about Black folks and the vaccine. I would send them an email. I would have a conversation with them and I just wouldn't hear back. Or they'd be like, okay, Lash, thank you for letting me know. But then weeks would go by with no action. And then that's when I realized, you know what? Let me imagine what my intervention would look like to this problem. And I finally reached out to one mentor about this idea. And he was like, just write it up. He was like, write it up as if you were writing an application for a grant. Tell me what your objectives are. Tell me how much money you would need to make something like this happen. And then just send it out to people. And I was like, what? And I think that that moment helped me start to understand the audacity, right? You know, because sometimes like, we have an idea, but then he was like, no. Like, tell me what the idea is, actualize it, and how you will move forward from there. So I started to talk to different foundations, and the American Board of Internal Medicine Foundation got us his first grant of $10,000. From there, I basically got an email list of student groups across the greater Boston area, reached out to them with this Google form that was of interest. We had this online webinar about what We Got Us was going to be. There was so much excitement around it. Before you knew it, we had this organization of young Black folks from across the greater Boston area, all committed to health justice and equity. Our motto from the very beginning was convey, not convince. We didn't want to try to convince people to get the vaccine, but rather convey information about it that they might not have had access to before. And we had an education team that was in charge of curating these empowerment sessions around the history of medical racism, the process of how the vaccines were created, and offer community members a space to ask any questions that they had about the vaccine. So if you were coming to us talking about green juice, 5G, it was a safe space where we were going to break down all of that and just have a genuine conversation with you. And we were doing that virtually initially because of everything that was going on with the pandemic. But as things started to open up, our community engagement team started to organize with different other community groups to do door knockings. And they were our brokers in the community, right? Because you show up to Roxbury knocking on doors, they think you're selling something or they think you're running for office and they ain't gonna see you.
Hello.
So they really were our brokers where we were able to say, look, we're here to stay. This is what we're trying to do. How can we collaborate with the public health department to make sure that you get vaccinated if that's something that is of interest to you? And it was just such a rewarding experience. The biggest lesson that we learned from that is right now we're in crisis mode. There's a lot of funding. There's a lot of interest in serving Black communities. But what happens when we're no longer in crisis mode? And I think that that's why in the back of our mind, for We Got Us, we also acknowledge that all of the inequities that we were seeing in our community, it was just being further exacerbated by this virus. But our community struggled long before COVID, and we knew that they were going to struggle long after. And that's why we knew that We Got Us had to be a sustainable initiative. So every year since 2021, when we started, we've tried to find intentional ways to grow and to be a sustainable force in our communities. So one thing that we've been able to do is create the Small Steps Project that is essentially like this holistic healing clinic that's been started by the incredible Ina Meng, who is an MD PhD student at Harvard Medical School, and Kareem King, who is our community engagement director. We're doing acupuncture and sound healing in our communities for free. We have a youth team of young health advocates who are doing empowerment sessions on sexual health in high schools across the greater Boston area. We even have a little podcast that we recently started that's really centering on uplifting community voices on topics that are related to some of the empowerment sessions that we have as well. And then we're still doing community-led research as well. So really, we've kind of created this ecosystem that's led by young people across the greater Boston area from high school all the way to graduate school. We're trying to just show up. The name of the organization represents our ethos, where it's like, we got us. So when systems fail, we're always going to be there to help pick up the pieces and make sure that we have each other's backs to make sure that we're healthy and fulfilled and have the opportunity to live joyous lives.
I love that. And the sustainability piece is so important because, like you said, there's so many experiences where grant funding will come into a community, build it up, and then disappear. And it's like, okay, now we're starting back to where we were.
Ashley, she knows. She knows. She has seen it. She has studied it. Absolutely. It happens all the time.
Oh, there's so many amazing things that you said there. But the one thing I want to pull out is the conveying, not convincing, because convincing can feel manipulative, right? Yeah. You're convincing me to go in one specific direction, whereas conveying is providing knowledge so that a person can feel empowered to make that decision on their own. And we already know that when people make decisions on their own, that's when they're more committed to that, because they're like, oh, I made this decision to get this vaccine because of what I know, as opposed to this was something that was pushed on me. So the foresight that you all had to focus on that, I commend you on that.
Thank you so much. That was something that we really thought intentionally about, because the vaccine was really being marketed as this silver bullet, right? It was expedient. If you just get vaccinated, you know, things will be back up and running and we'll fix everything. But people were not talking enough about the struggles that these communities were having, right? You're telling me to get vaccinated now, but what happened when 2 months ago I wasn't able to pay my rent? Or what happened when I got laid off? It was just so much deeper there. And that whole model really came out of, yes, the vaccine is a tool in our toolkit. We want you to have access to all the tools to keep you safe. But we also have to acknowledge that we have to put public health first. And by putting public health first, it allows us to also center social justice and addressing all of these other inequities that kind of made it so that you were suffering in this way.
Yeah. And the nuances of that, right? The social determinants of health that are happening. It's like, okay, you're focused on this one thing, but my life is so much bigger than just this vaccine. How are you going to show up and help me in those other areas? Okay. Because that's what I'm really concerned about right now.
Right. Like, I'll get you a little vaccine, but how am I going to put food on the table? Like, you know, like, help me understand that. Yeah.
And we talk so much about patient-centered care, and that's the definition of it, right? It's not just caring for a patient for this one reason that they're in your office, but it's realizing all of these other things that are impacting their life actually all work together to impact each other, and realizing that you can't address one without the other. They coexist.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Also, kudos to your mentor for giving you that little seed of like, write it up.
Yes.
You know, write the vision, make it plain. Yes. And because that's the definition, grassroots. Could you have ever imagined that 5 years later, you would be in this position where there's sustainability, there's a whole project? Like, wow.
Truly, no. In that moment, I was just in this mode of, we got to build the plane while we fly. It was hard. In my second year of medical school, which at Harvard Medical School, we're doing our clinical rotations. And you talk to any medical student, they'll tell you like, okay, when we got on the wards, we were doing clinical rotations. It was very busy. It was hard. And I was just thinking, I can't start this. There's no way. I don't have time for this. Thankfully, my program was understanding that when I had elective time and whatnot, like, this is what I wanted to use my time toward. And they were very supportive. I think that the reason why we've been able to build this beautiful project is truly because of all of the work that the students that originally started We Got Us With Me, they really were the engine behind it all. And I'm so proud of them. And I think that what's been so cool about We Got Us is that a lot of those students have now gone on to medical school, went on to get MD PhDs, or like are in their programs right now. One of our beloved members just got into medical school as well. So I think it's been really cool to just see their brilliance be recognized as well as they're on their own journeys to becoming leaders in public health and medicine.
And for those people in the other states outside of Massachusetts that don't have We Got Us backing them, what are some suggestions that you would provide for both either providers and patients on how they can work better together to achieve that health justice, to make sure that the needs of your patients are centered, especially in this ever-changing health landscape?
It's so important to really center patient and community voices. And to censor them in a way where they actually have access to power and agency. We might see community advisory boards, but the community member is not able to make the meeting because it's at 1 p.m. on a Thursday. Then when it's time to vote on matters of the organization, the community member might not be a voting member of the board. Or there are just ways like that where we might have patients and community members be these placeholders. Yes, we've done the thing, we've checked the box, but I think that really being intentional about making sure that that individual has the same amount of power as the chair of that board is so critically important. Finding ways to intentionally make sure that that's happening is something that I would absolutely suggest for those who are in medicine and healthcare and have access to making those types of changes. And then I think for patients and community members, just keep doing what y'all are doing and just remembering that when you're in medical and clinical spaces, that's your space. So ask the questions. At the Brigham, we have a mix of patients. We have very well-off and wealthy patients, but we also have a lot of patients who are on our version of Medicaid and might not have the same access as the other group of patients. But what I do see is that those patients who are more well-off, they come in with research papers to site during visits. They often come with a familial advocate or someone who's there to make sure that things are being done. They get visited the most when they're admitted inpatient. For patients, it's okay to take up space, and it's okay to push back, and it's okay to ask questions. I see a lot of community members from historically marginalized groups and populations. They'll feel like they don't want to be a bother, or they feel like medicine has to be done to them instead of it being a partnership. And that is not the way that medicine and healing should be. So I just encourage you to take up space, to reflect on your questions, and to demand for them to be answered.
I love that. The power and agency is so right. Historically, in marginalized communities, power and agency was the opposite of what we had, you know? So, like, well, at this point, I'm going to take what I can get, because I remember that ancestors and generations before me, they would have done anything, which is what they did to be. So I'm going to take what I have. But that switching of that mindset, like you said, from survival and just taking anything to realizing, like, oh yeah, they fought for us to have this, and now let's maximize it.
Exactly. Like, it's no longer an honor just to have access to healthcare. It's an honor to have great quality healthcare. You deserve that.
And for you personally and with your colleagues, how has your work been impacted since this new administration? And what are you and your colleagues thinking about or doing already to be able to keep health justice at the center when there are so many attacks on it?
It's been tough. The way that I've really found strength in this moment is just leaning on the work of our ancestors and the folks who've been in this work longer. If you talk to any community organizer, activist, they'll tell you that before the election of Trump 2.0, they were already doing the work, and they were already set on continuing to work, because for them, it doesn't matter who's in office. They're still going to show up to the food pantry. They're still going to keep organizing. They're still going to keep door knocking so that we can get that local bill passed to make sure that zoning laws are changed in the city. Really trying to have that mindset has helped me during this time, and I think it's helped our team as well. I think folks like Mariam Kaba and Kelly Hayes, who wrote Let This Radicalize You, their teaching of we are each other's hope has gotten me through this moment where it just seems like it's just chaos every day, right? And I think that that is by design. It is to try to make us feel like our worlds are destabilized. It's to make us feel confused on how to move forward, to make us feel like we're paralyzed. I've done my best to try to stay out of that mindset and to just keep finding ways to put one foot in front of the other. I have bad days too. I think that I think about these things a lot. So I've been able to find ways to rationalize how I'm going to move forward. But I know that these are difficult times. There's troubling times. But I just hope that we can find more ways to get even closer together. And I think what we got us taught us is that we are capable of coming together in the face of chaos. And I hope that those lessons can continue to ring true during this time of destabilization and uncertainty as well. So with We Got Us, we're still having our biweekly meetings. We're still having our community gatherings. When a community member asks us to show up to an event to table at, we're still showing up. Community members are still having events around health equity, despite the anti-DEI rhetoric and all of that stuff. So the biggest thing for me has been, we still have to continue to put one foot in front of the other and control what's in our locus of control on the day-to-day, and not allow the frenzy and the political theater that's happening to distract us from what the ultimate goal is, and that is liberation and self-sustainability for our communities. And we can do that work regardless of who's in office.
I'm Ashley Freeman, and thanks for listening to this episode of Advocates in Action. If you haven't yet, please subscribe, review, and share this podcast. Your support is greatly appreciated. We enjoy connecting with our listeners, so please visit our website for show notes, resources, and ways to engage with us on social media. Thanks for listening.